Hey everybody, welcome back to the podcast. We hope everyone's had a great week. This is show number 12, and this week we have Dave Eichinger with us, who is the winner of the Pinhole Sprocket Challenge that we've been doing. So we're going to talk to Dave and find out about his pinhole interest, and we're going to talk about some other fun projects that are going on. Everybody, we are back, ready to talk about some pinhole photography, and this is show number 12. Andrew?
Is it really? There? I am here, yes. you sounded just like me then. Hello, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Yeah, right.
Show number 12, is it really?
Yep, that's where we're at. Clicking
doing
right
well.
Along.
Doing well.
Yeah. Yep.
Have you had a good week, Corey?
I have had a good week. I've been kind of experimenting and trying some stuff. And it's going pretty good, I think. You know, I just have to keep going through variables and making sure everything's working, you know.
You do, yes.
Yeah. So this week our guest is Dave Eichinger, who is the winner of the Pinhole Sprocket Contest challenge that we had going on. Dave, how are you?
Fine, thanks. How you guys doing?
Yo, we're doing great.
We're doing very well. Congratulations, Dave.
Thank you very much.
We'll talk about the winning shot a little bit later. But yeah, well done.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yay.
All right, Dave.
Yeah. Don't mind me, the only loser amongst you all.
Well, we give you the honorary award of trying, Andrew. So you get that.
I did send you something special in the post, though, didn't I? That sounds a bit strange and a bit dodgy, but I did send you something special in the post, Corey.
Me? Yeah, I got it the other day.
Yeah.
The washi.
Washi.
The washi paper. Yeah.
Japanese paper with sensitized for use in your 120 film camera or pinhole camera if you're really brave.
I am going to be brave. My plan is to... I'm going to, instead of just burning through that roll and seeing what happens, I'm going to keep it a mystery, and I'm going to put that roll in one of my cameras, and that's going to be my summer roll. So I'm going to shoot it over the course of 2 or 3 months since I've been looking at it online and examples, and see what happens at the end of the summer with it. But
well, I'll let you be the guinea pig, and then I shall order myself another roll.
All right, that sounds good.
That sounds awesome. I haven't tried that stuff yet.
But back to more important things, Dave. You've been doing photography for a really long time.
I have been, yes.
And you've been doing pinhole for a while. So if you want to take a second and let our listeners know a little bit about yourself and about where you're at photographically and what you're up to.
I'm Dave Eichinger. I teach photography, and I do photography as my own personal therapy, so to speak. I got into photography in the darkroom when I was in high school, when I was 16, and really fell in love with it. I decided I wanted to do what my photo teacher was doing, and so I went to college to learn to be a photography professor. And I've been doing that for a few decades now.
Awesome.
I kind of got into pinhole, at least 20 years ago or so. I bought a 4x5 Santa Barbara wide-angle pinhole camera. And
Dave, what's a Santa Barbara? That's a new one on me. Tell us about a Santa Barbara pinhole camera. Maybe Corey knows.
It's just a wooden brand.
Yep.
Yeah, okay. It's been around. I guess I've seen them on B&H even today.
Okay,
yep. So they're still around.
Yep, they are.
Well, you guys are really lucky having a store like B&H. I occasionally go on their website, and it's a great store, and you've got loads of great stores for secondhand cameras and new cameras.
KEH normally has
KEH. Yeah,
something you're looking for. Yeah,
they're great for. For used stuff.
Yeah, they are.
B&H, if you ever get a chance to actually go there, the store is, oh my gosh, it's like Disneyland for photographers.
That's what Tom was telling me. He's on Instagram as
Pat McGroin. He said he went there one time and he told him what he wanted, and he's like, there's conveyor belts all through the ceilings.
Yeah.
And then you give them a ticket and they put it in a bucket or something. And he's like, it's this big ordeal.
It's very organized. Very, very organized.
You really need to keep me away from that store. I'm glad I live here.
Yes, it's dangerous.
So Dave, as a teacher, do you, like you said, you're in San Diego, as a professor, are you seeing an interest coming back in people doing pinhole photography and alternative processing, or is it kind of staying on a steady digital flow of the you know new school of photographers?
Right. Yeah, we've switched a big portion of our courses over to digital, of course, but there's still we have three dark rooms in our new building.
Wow.
We had to decide, designing a new building about 10 years ago, do we even want a dark room? And we decided, yes, we do, because we feel it's the best way to learn photography. And an awful lot of people still love the dark room process.
Sure.
So we designed the dark rooms in there, and they built this beautiful new building for us. And we still offer about 12 classes each year in darkroom photography, black and white.
That's pretty cool. Yeah.
So there definitely is still an interest. And we have a class coming up this fall in alternative processes. So that's still a popular option too.
What sort of alternative processes are you looking at there, Dave?
This class will be some like Polaroid type transfers and cyanotype, Van Dyck, salt printing. We're going to kind of go with whatever the class kind of chooses, and some will maybe do some platinum, palladium, a few other things also.
So what have I done with those? I've done Polaroid emulsion transfers, lifts onto watercolor paper.
Right.
And salt printing I've just got into as well, but I spoke about that on a previous show, but I've just started salt printing. So that's really, I'm really loving that, I have to say.
Yeah, there's some great processes like that that are just so hands-on, and the students, you know, people in general these days sit at a computer way too many hours, and being able to stand up and move around and hear water running and be underneath amber safe lights and all these things that are so different from their everyday life.
The smell of fixer.
Yeah, the smell of fixer.
I have odorless fixer, an odorless stop
button. Ooh.
Yeah, we use that too, but it still has a definite odor. So
it does. Yeah. I spend way too much time in front of the computer and I scan some negatives, but I really hate scanning. And I'm all for the hybrid process if it keeps people involved in film. But sure. I just love to go in that little man cave, you know, and lock myself away, making prints. The trouble is I get so little time, you know, and it's been probably 3 weeks since I've been in the darkroom, and I've got pinhole pictures to print from recent holidays. But it's really encouraging that you've still got people wanting darkroom classes, Dave.
And
what sort of age groups of folks are you teaching?
My students it's a community college in downtown San Diego. And so our students started around 17, 18 and go up to 80 plus.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
There you go, Andrew.
Ouch.
No, this big.
Well, yes, I'm not quite that old, but I have been at it a while. So so the 80-year-olds compared to the 18-year-olds, are the older people getting into digital and the younger film, which is kind of the wrong way around, or is there no rhyme or
reason?
Yeah.
It's a little bit of both. Yeah, definitely. We have, young and old students together in all the classes. So, a lot of the, younger folks have never... I've had students who have never even seen a roll of film, literally have not seen a roll of film.
Wow. Not even 35 millimeter. I can understand if they haven't seen medium format, but 35 millimeter is kind of.
Yeah. Some of them, they'll see a roll of film, or they'll They'll wonder how they put a roll of film in their digital camera. it's just, the 17, 18-year-olds or the younger ones especially, we have some high school kids that come through for like tours. And they just, they have no idea what film is, how the whole process works. It's astounding to us.
Right.
Well, it is to us, but it's understandable, isn't it? If you've got a household with which hasn't picked up a film 20 years,
right?
Why would they be exposed?
Yeah,
to yeah. Film?
And certainly pinhole photography. I mean, goodness me.
Yeah.
I mean, my friends look at me as though I'm some kind of idiot when I get this box out and say, "What is that?"
Yeah.
And I've just come away from a weekend with some good friends. And I had my 6x12 pinhole camera with me.
Uh-huh.
And they were all genuinely fascinated. They all knew of my love and passion for film photography. And I might have let it slip or two that they could hear me on the podcast. But they, I showed them the pinhole camera. I showed them how to load 120 film. I showed them 120 film. And they were just amazed, you know. But they were really... really enthusiastic about the whole thing. I don't think any of them are going to pick up a pinhole camera
right.
anytime soon. But but why would the kids know about film? You know, why?
Yeah. They? Well, a lot of them are on Instagram, so and a lot of them see film images on Instagram and just assume that it's some filter or some fancy
right
frames and borders and
special effects. I was taking a photograph of my niece a few weeks ago with my Holger, and I was she was jumping up and down in a puddle with an umbrella. And I did a sort of double exposures of her, and then immediately she came round and wanted to look at the back of the camera. And of course, how do you explain to her? This is a 4-year-old, you see. So
right.
There I am trying to explain to her. Well. It's not a digital camera, it's a film camera. I mean, I just gave up, really.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. So, Dave, as far as being in San Diego, how do you feel San Diego's scene kind of fits in with your pinhole photography? I know you guys have the coast there, so you have you have it, and Andrew has it. I don't have it, so I'm really kind of interested in it because I have nothing but flat beaches, but... As far as like, subject matter for pinhole work, how does your area work out?
I think it's great. We've got a beautiful park area, about a dozen museums in an area called Balboa Park.
Yep, know it.
It's right. There's a big world famous San Diego Zoo is there, and
cool.
And, bunch of museums, and so it's a great place to shoot. There are hills and old buildings and just beautiful buildings and palm trees, and it's a great place to wander and also
cool.
to see the photographic museum there.
You've got the old I'm just trying to remember, we went to old town
right. Uh-huh.
Yeah, and there was old-timey guys dressed up and and the old buildings. I am thinking of San Diego, aren't I?
Yeah, uh-huh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
There's an old town not
You're
too
talking
far
about
from
it,
Balboa Park.
Oh, well, I know, but I couldn't remember. You know, I get to my age and all the memories start blurring into one.
Right.
Yeah, a lot of cities have an area called Old Town. So, but yeah, San Diego does also right near the airport. And yeah, then the coastline here is rocky and beautiful. And there are a few, sandy beaches and cliffs and dangerous hiking cliffs that people need to be really careful on.
Right.
So yeah, it's a great place to shoot.
And you can just hang out on Mission Beach, can't you? That's a great place.
Yeah, it's a real quiet little family beach there. Yeah, it's no waves, so it's perfect for little kids.
Have you taken your pinhole camera on that old wooden roller coaster, the 1930s wooden roller coaster?
No, I haven't. I've shot in the area with other cameras, but not my pinhole there yet. Not that. It's Belmont Park, they call that.
It's a challenge for you.
Yeah. Yeah. So what, Dave, what led up to, let's talk about your shot that you took. It looked like you were on a train or taking a trip or something? And yeah. Did you know those people that were in the shot, or just kind of like give us a little bit behind the scenes of what okay. led you to that point?
Yeah, this year, just awesomely, my birthday happened to fall on World Pinhole Photography Day. So, So which is a really nice little coincidence. So I asked my daughter if she wanted to go to Los Angeles for the day. So she and I hopped on the train. It's about 90 miles north of San Diego to downtown LA.
Sure.
We took the train up there and we played tourist all day and walked around Chinatown and just around that region of downtown. And then we took the train back home, and I was just sitting there with my pinhole cameras. I took three pinhole cameras with me, 6x6, and then a 35 and a 6x6 Holga, and then my 6x12 Holga. And I just had my 35 in the Holga on my Gorilla Pod and strapped it onto my knee and aimed it toward those people who I don't know. And they were just sort of two people who didn't know each other, apparently, and just sitting there napping on the way back home or wherever they were going. And we were headed south from LA to San Diego. And took a few images. They were a minute, 2 minutes, 3 minutes, somewhere around there each. And I guess the images were liked by the judges, whoever the judges were.
So do you shoot with 3200 a lot? I mean, that's not a common, film speed, that film stock that most people would be shooting in a pinhole camera, doing sprockets with, I guess.
Right. Yeah, I've got a miscellaneous bag of film in my fridge, and most of it's outdated, but it's been in the fridge since it was new. And I thought, well, what do I want today that I can shoot indoors, outdoors? I thought, well, this would be a good option. So, yeah, I just chose that film so I could shoot in the shade or inside the buildings, et cetera, more easily.
It was Delta. Was it the Delta 3200?
Yes, this one was Delta. Yep. Yeah,
I love Delta 3200. I keep 120 rolls in my fridge, and I use it a lot in medium format. Not so much 35mm, but mm-hmm. I develop it in Ilford's DDX developer. And you know what? I make darkroom prints on fiber paper, probably on that paper size above 8x10. I think it's 11.5x12 inches, something like that.
Right.
And it just makes beautiful prints. There's no grain. People sizing it grainy,
Right.
I tend to rate it in a film camera with a lens, if I can mention that, at 1600, because I think that's probably closer to its true speed. And develop it in Ilford's chemicals, and it's just wonderful. I've been shooting HP5 rated at 1600 just for comparison, and I've been pleased with that too. So that's way cheaper. So
cool. Yeah,
I'm not really sure what I'll do going forward, but I'll probably still shoot some 3200. But I've never ever put it in a pinhole camera, so may have to try that.
So listeners, if you want to get some 3200, you should get it and try it in your pinhole cameras, because Dave is a master at it, and he won.
And you've got to listen to the professor, because why wouldn't you?
He's suggesting that you do that. I've only shot with I've actually only shot, I think, one roll of 3200, and I did it I had the 6x17 Reality So Subtle.
Yeah.
And I got a really cool shot of a car passing in the moon off to the far right, and you can see the car lights coming over the hill, and then the rest of the frame is nothing but the car lights, and it's all completely black. It's pretty cool, but
oh, nice.
So maybe I should try it again. But
yeah. So Dave.
Yes.
Dave, here's a question that'll just divert you a little bit. Was Jerry Lewis into pinhole photography?
Not that I'm aware of. No.
Go on, explain all about Jerry Lewis, because I read somewhere that you were you at college with him?
No, my first year of teaching, when I was 24, I was hired at a little private school in Beverly Hills.
Ah.
And in Beverly Hills, of course, a lot of the students there are kids of famous people. And one of my students was Joe Lewis, who was Jerry Lewis's son.
That's cool.
We had, I had the kids in my class of Ed Asner, Carol Burnett, Carol O'Connor, Jerry Lewis, Charles Bronson.
Really?
It was an amazing experience, and especially for open house, you know, back to school night when all the parents came to to the school. Yeah. And I, oh my God, it was like, oh my God, I'm in Hollywood.
Yeah.
So
you didn't want to upset Charles Bronson, did you? He might have got
No. Although he's not probably as tough as he was in the movies. So
no, I'm sure.
He still has that look, though. Did he still have that kind of look? You know, like you're like, oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Bronson. He just kind of like cut eyes at you. You know.
Yeah, I only taught there for a year, but it was an awesome experience to be, you know, I was pretty young myself, and to hang out with those, my students were only, you know, 6 or 8 years younger than me, and
that's pretty cool.
Yeah
definitely.
Dave, I saw some wonderful infrared. I have to say now, the work you produce with infrared is fantastic.
Thank you so much.
Really? I like it too. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, and would you mind sharing your secrets with us and anybody else who might be listening?
I wouldn't mind. And I got into that just a tiny bit when I was in high school. I shot some Kodak infrared.
That's the high speed, good old infrared.
HIE. Yeah, they stopped making about 10 years ago.
And that's part of your secret though, is that you were using the true, infrared film.
Do you have any of that left, David?
I still do. Yeah, I've got about 10 or 15 rolls.
Don't tell anybody.
No, I'll sell it on eBay for $100 a roll. So.
Wow.
I really ration it. I shoot maybe a roll or two a year when I'm traveling.
Special.
I'll be in Europe, Norway, et cetera, this summer. So I'm taking a couple rolls with me.
Cool.
And I'm really rash in that film. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I didn't mean to interrupt you, Dave. I'll let you continue with your tips and tricks, if you have any, for doing infrared.
Yes, oh, please.
Well, yeah, the infrared film, if you can still get the HIE, I know one of my friends that still has 100+ rolls in his refrigerator or freezer.
Wow.
He really hoarded it when it went out of production. But... I personally use it with a red filter and not with the black infrared filter. That way it's just a lot easier. And
so is that the three-stop red filter, the 25A
I use a 29, personally, the deep red filter. Mm-hmm. And I also use it sometimes in a rangefinder camera. So even if I do use a black filter, you know, the infrared filter, I can still see through the camera, which is a nice option of the rangefinder.
Sure.
And then I develop in Kodak HC-110. I just like that combination of that film with that developer.
What do you do the dilution A or B, or what's
dilution,
your favorite?
Dilution B is my normal. Yeah.
Now right. I've read a lot about HC-110, and I'm a bit confused because it's quite thick, isn't it? Like syrupy in its natural state.
Yes. Yeah. Which is.
So, I read on the data sheet that Kodak recommend you making sort of diluting that down initially, and then you dilute it further for working, or can you take it straight from a syrupy and dilute it?
I go straight from the syrup. I mix it 1:31, so I just mix a third of an ounce to 10 ounces of water for one roll of 35.
What's that in milliliters?
I don't know.
2 million.
Oh, Professor, you failed.
2 million milliliters, Andrew.
You don't know, do you?
I live in the country that doesn't believe in science, evidently, and we don't use milliliters and all those things. So
now I know for a fact that it was announced some years back in America that you were all going to decimal and metric, and then it never happened.
No, it lasted a day, Andrew. Literally one day.
Yeah, I remember that when I was a little kid.
Yeah.
They were going to do that, and they announced it, and it just died in a big hurry. too many people were too confused. And I still teach the metric system in my classes when we're cutting mats.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because it's much easier. Less math involved.
Yeah.
Yes.
Dividing fractions for most students is very difficult. So I teach millimeters and centimeters, and they, oh my gosh, this is so much better.
Yeah. Well, so is over and over. Liters and milliliters. It's makes much more sense.
Yes. Yes. Sure. I agree. Definitely. Cool.
So you're developing your codec, high-speed infrared, in HC-110. And are you using any more readily available film stocks for IR work, Dave, or just sticking to that?
When I teach an infrared class, since nobody can easily find the HIE, the Kodak film, when it was still around just a few years ago, we used the F-Key Aura. That was my second film of choice after the Kodak. Mm-hmm. And they stopped making that. So the F-Key, the regular F-Key, the non-Aura model, was my third choice. My fourth choice was Rolly. And my last choice is Ilford. Even though I'm a big Ilford fan, I'm not a big fan of their infrared film.
Well, I think that's more of a semi-IR film, isn't it?
Right, yeah.
Now, I did read, I've got a roll of Silbera. Silbera, that's it. Somebody kindly sent me the roll of a 100-pan film, which is... now, I know some of that is reworked stock from surveillance film, but it's supposed to have an extended IR sensitivity. Hmm. Are you familiar with the Silbera?
No, films? I haven't tried that one yet. So I'll add that to my list.
I have some of that. I think it's four rolls of that. The ECFI.
Oh, ECFI? Yeah.
Yeah, ECFI. Yeah, I have some of that in.
Yeah, that was a good option too.
In the freezer, I cannot find any development times for it though.
Yeah, if in doubt, I use the same ones that I use for Kodak. You know, seven minutes at 70 degrees or something like that.
So, how are you managing your exposures using your infrared stock and the red filter? Dave, what's how are you working that out?
My norm is about ISO 500. Metering through the red filter.
Okay.
See, that's what I. That's.
Is it what you do?
That's kind of like what I do. Yeah, because I got tired of trying to pull it to like 12, and trying to come up with a development time for it. So I just get my exposure for doing this. This is for doing it in pinhole. I just get my exposure for it at 400, and then just apply the 9-stop. Filter factor, because I'm using the R72. Okay. And then when you go to develop it, you just develop it at box speed and it's no problem. And then, you know,
just remind me what film you're using, Curry.
I'm using the Rolly, the Rolly IR 400. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't like pulling it, cause it's just a nightmare to me. I mean, however anyone else does it and it works out for them, you know, absolutely. But it was trying to figure out what to shoot it at, how much factor to factor in, filter factor for the filter, and then, you know, and it just kind of turned this big giant question, hazy question mark. So I was like, I'm just going to keep it as simple as I possibly can. And that's just to shoot it at box speed, develop it at box speed, you know, and then just make your exposures with your filter factor on it.
But then reciprocity failure is probably tremendous with that film, with that combination in a pinhole.
Well, I'll tell you that honestly, I haven't even been factoring it in. Most of the time, outside, summer, bright sunny day, my exposures have been 1.5 to 2 minutes, and they're coming out really good. So I'm kind of just assuming that I'm overcoming the reciprocity, you know, factor with it from shooting it at 400. I know it sounds really bad to say that I don't know what it is on it, but it's so expensive that I can't afford to blow through a couple rolls just to figure out what the reciprocity is on it.
If you've got something that works for you, then
yeah,
that's kind of like where I'm at with it. I'm like, and I have kind of like a checklist with it where I, you know, like I only shoot it when it's bright, you know, and so I've gotten to this point where I only shoot it under certain conditions. So I know what those times are going to be, and I know that my exposures are coming out balanced, you know, when I develop it. So I've kind of just been like, I'll just let it go. You know, I'm not going to drive myself crazy trying to figure out what it is. So.
If it works, it works.
Yep.
Dave, do you make many darkroom prints yourself in your sort of personal projects? Do you have any personal projects that you're pursuing?
I'm in the darkroom pretty much every day, but I'm helping my students, and I'm very frequently envious of, I'm in here, but I'm not working on my own prints. But I do enjoy teaching quite a bit. So, but yeah, I still obviously do shoot a lot of film, and I get in the darkroom as often as I can. And mostly my infrared images, 35 that I often print full frame with a messy border negative carrier that I have.
I like that. I like that border that you do with those.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's I've had that carrier for about 20 years now that I filed out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have a few 35 mil carriers. I mean, but mainly my two enlargers is one is a Miopta Magnifax, which goes up to 6x9 if I use glass carriers. And then I have a De Vere 405 for large format. So with either of those, I can just crop down to give me the full frame generally.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very cool. Nice.
Well, let's take a quick break and we'll be right back. All right, so we have some cameras that we like, and as soon as Dave, there's Dave right there. Hey,
here
Dave.
I am.
Hello.
Yay.
Hello. There you are.
So, Dave, what does your camera, your pinhole camera lineup, basically consist of? Do you have something that you favor more than the other, or?
I think my favorite is probably my Zero Image 2000.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Little. Small, beautiful teak wood, 6x6.
Mm-hmm.
Then I've got a Holga that I had converted by Randy Smith at Holga Mods.
Yep.
And cool. Yeah, then I've got a 6x12 pinhole Holga that was made by Holga to be a 6x12.
Is that the W? What do they call that? WP.
Yeah, WPC, Holga 120 WPC.
That does 6x9 also, doesn't it?
Mine just, well, maybe it does. I just do 6x12 in it.
I got you.
Alex, if you're not familiar with our Welsh friend, Alex Purcell at Grainy Blur, Dave, he uses one of those and gets some great results.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're becoming quite hard to find now.
Yeah, definitely.
I had one and I sold it to Mike Gutterman of the Negative Positives podcast.
Who's right. that?
Mike Gutterman.
Never heard of him.
Never heard of that guy.
You should have sold it to me. You know I've got a severe case of that GIS problem.
I know, but I didn't think you'd want to pay, you know, the price of having to ship it to you.
Well, it costs loads of money to send stuff from America to here, but hardly anything to send it from here to America. So
yeah, there you go.
I'm not sure what that is. Anyway, we digress.
Yeah. So after your wide angle, your Holga WPC, what is what's in your lineup, Dave?
My newest one is Sergey made a camera. I found him on Instagram, and he makes cameras out of driftwood from the Baltic Sea in Russia.
Mm-hmm.
And so I told him I wanted a 6x9. I've never had a 6x9 pinhole. So he made a beautiful 6x9 driftwood spalted maple that I've used a few times recently. And it's just a beautiful piece of art.
Awesome.
Yeah, he makes amazing cameras.
Dave, we're waiting for James Gurin to come out with his 6x9 reality camera because that's next on his list, I think.
That's what he's saying. And I want to get into doing 6x9 also, so I'm kind of anxiously awaiting that one. But
do you make pinhole cameras, Dave?
I have made some, and actually I'm converting one right now. I have a sprocket rocket that I really enjoyed for a short time, and somehow the lens fell off.
Yikes.
I'm not sure.
Well, sprocket. Is that a Lomo camera? Isn't it?
It is, rocket. Yeah.
Well, is it? Are you surprised that the lens fell off?
Well, actually, for a plastic camera, it was a pretty well-made camera. Yeah. I'm not sure if I dropped it. I mean, I'm climbing around the rocks and things, and I don't remember abusing. I'm pretty careful with my cameras. But, sure. The lens just sort of fell off, and I thought, well, I really like the sprocket look, and mm-hmm. it's a nice, small, lightweight camera, so I'll just convert that to a pinhole, and that'll be heading to Europe with me this summer.
Cool.
Are you coming to the UK, Dave, or is it just...
Not UK this time. I've been there a few times and love traveling to the UK. This time it'll be more the Nordic region, Iceland, et cetera.
Cool. Oh, that's becoming very popular, isn't it?
Yeah, it sure is. A little too much so, but that's okay.
If you haven't checked out, I've mentioned this before on the show, I went to see an exhibition by Tim Rudman. I don't know if you're familiar with
yes,
Tim Rudman.
Yes, definitely. His new book on Iceland. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And we, Graham and I from the Sunny 16 podcast, to get another shout out in, Graham and I went to his show in Oxfordshire.
Mm.
And he was there. We met him and we talked to him about his darkroom work. And then he held a Q&A session for people who were lucky enough to squeeze into the room, and it was just fascinating. I've been a Tim Rudman fan for years, but to see his prints on the wall and to hear the story behind them, and I think that was what struck me most, was the thought and the process and the pre-visualization and mm-hmm. the craftsmanship and the artistry behind it was just brilliant. And Dave, that was one of the things that Alex Yates, who judged our sprocket competition last week. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He said that he always looks for images with a story behind them, something to make him think. He looks for simplicity. And when you're out shooting, are you thinking deeply about this stuff, or are you doing what I do and just plonk your camera down somewhere? Are you looking to tell a story?
Typically, it's all visual. Occasionally, there's a story involved, definitely. But quite often, it's just purely aesthetic, purely composition and light.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just something will catch your eye.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Normally something will just catch my eye and I'll look at it and then I'll decide, start breaking apart, like elements of it, or figuring out how I'm going to frame it and what I expect to be,
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So.
I was looking at some images on Flickr. Are you a Flickr fan, Dave?
Yes. I've been on Flickr many times. Yeah.
Check out RT Photos, Ross Togashi. He lives in Honolulu, and he does homemade pinhole cameras, and he photographs pretty much exclusively by the coast, and a lot of his images are so surreal. Like, I'm staring at one now of just a chair stuck in the water, or a plastic shovel. And then there's some other things that look like plastic pigs. They're just great. Ross Togashi, to get my shout outs in early.
Okay, I'll check that out.
So are you at the end, if you're on Flickr, Dave, you'll have to give us your details at the end when we do those shout outs, because I'm not sure whether I follow you, but maybe.
Yeah, I'm not on there anymore. Instagram is enough. Yep. Consuming enough, plus Facebook with my friends and things. So.
There you go. See, that's exactly my point, Dave. Me and you are on the same
well, you don't,
virtual you, page, so to say. So to say.
If you go, if you put into Google flickr.com and then / Ross Togashi, T-O-G-A-S-H-I, you'll see his images. So they're well worth checking out.
Yeah,
definitely.
And we have a Facebook group. Sorry, not a Facebook group. We have one of those. We have a Flickr group as well, so you can join it.
Okay, awesome. Yeah, I got my 4x5 going, and I shot some infrared in that the other day to give it a test, and it was interesting to say the least. I had a new camera, new film holders, new film, new developing technique.
You were using the X-ray film, weren't you? Was it the X-ray film?
X-ray. No, film? No, I was using the Rolly, the Rolly IR400.
Oh, were you?
I was shooting that in 4x5, and that film is extremely. It's just really, the base is really, really thin. I mean, it's almost, I don't know, it's just weird. I've never, it feels different than it does in 120.
I shot some of that washi film, paper film in 4x5, and that is so, so difficult to load into your holders. So after throwing stuff across the darkroom in frustration, you don't want to be doing this in a changing bag because you'll get a severe case of the sweats.
Right.
And but in the end, I think somebody told me to use a piece of 4x5 film which has been processed so it's clear, you know.
Yeah.
And I then put the washi film sort of in contact with it and slide the two into the dark slide, and that works pretty well. It holds it in place. And maybe that would work for your.
I'm going to have to try something because I started using the Spearman SP445, the 4x5 development tank.
Yeah, I have one of those.
Mm-hmm. And when the emulsion for the Rolly IR400 is so thin and light, once I put them into the holders, even just holding it to try and put another piece in, if you touch it, it pops off of the tracks. So I don't know if that's just that developing tank itself, something normal with that, or if it's the film. The film is, just slide right out. So, well, I have some.
Go on, sorry.
No, I was going to say, I have some Ilford. I think it's FP4. That I'm going to go out and shoot and load that into it and see if that works any better because it has. I know it has a thicker base.
Yeah,
than the Rolly.
I use the SP445 tank most often. I also have the mod 54. Is it the insert that goes in the 1 liter? However many.
That's 1,000 milliliters, Andrew.
Yeah,
there we go.
It's about. 75 ounces. I've no idea. Patterson tank. That's good as well. I like that. But you'll be fine with Ilford film. I use my 4x5 stock is either FOMA 100 or FP4 or HP5, and they're all good in the Stearman tank.
Yeah,
I think you need to just watch that agitation. I've had. I think probably due to either too much uniform agitation. I've had some on the non-emulsion side. I've had some the impression of the part of the holder left on the film. It didn't affect the prints I made, but I was a bit worried when I saw that. And so my inversion regime now is kind of for the first 30 seconds, I'm tipping it away from me sideways on and then end on and mixing it up somewhat to just try and get that random flow. And then once after a minute, I'm giving it maybe 10 seconds, not just in the same direction, but backwards and forwards and sideways and I'm getting much more consistent development.
Cool. Dave, do you do any large format or smaller, large format, 4x5 or up to 8x10 or anything like that?
Yeah. All of the above. When I'm doing film, I typically just use stainless steel hangers in a dark room. I just prefer that developing method.
That's real old school, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
That's how I used to do it.
I think it's the only way, but
yeah.
Yeah, that's I converted one of my first pinholes, I guess, was actually an old Graflex 4x5 that I pulled the lens off and put some aluminium foil
well done.
Yeah. on the front and poked a little pinhole in there. And some of my favorite images of my own pinhole work are from that old funky converted camera
cool.
that I hauled around downtown LA years ago.
Yeah.
I have a pinhole. I have a pinhole that I can fit onto my Toyo field camera. In fact, it was a pinhole that came with an Intrepid 4x5, and I sold the Intrepid and kept the pinhole. So I've had some great results using the Intrepid pinhole, which is just mounted in a board on that goes on in the lens holder, you know, in the panel. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sure. Mm. So I posted. On Instagram, on the show's Instagram page the other day about Mary Pennington. She is at art_map, and she made that the pinhole cube. Did you see that, Andrew and Dave? Did you guys see that?
I did, yeah. She comes up, there's an image on each surface of mm-hmm. the cube.
Yeah.
And then Is she then making positive prints and displaying them as a cube on a stand? Is that what she's doing?
Yes, she makes these bases. She makes these bases with it. And I have she sent me a link for her Instagram page. I mean, for her email page, not her email page, her web page, where she kind of breaks it down and gives you a behind the scenes look at it. So I'll put that link in the show notes. But I was just wondering. It got me thinking about that, Dave, and I was just thinking, have you ever done any crazy abstract breaking out of the normal kind of traditional pinhole
in a truck, for instance?
Sent her a message, and I hope she'll come on and talk with us about it, because that's amazing. We'll talk about that in a second there.
I haven't personally done too much of that, although when I'm showing my students various options, I show them the people that use, you know, like we've got a guy locally here who is really into pinhole and building pinhole cameras. And one of his favorite ones is using the Altoids tin.
Yeah.
And his Minty Cam, he calls
mm-hmm.
it. Yep. And... yeah, he's written a really nice book about pinhole photography.
Does he have two 35mm cassettes just sort of taped onto the end of it and then winds it through?
Yeah, his book shows, I don't know, dozens of different pinhole cameras and then the results from each one. And,
who's that, cool. Dave?
His name's escaping me at the moment, and I feel really bad.
That's okay.
Put you on the spot.
Yeah, I can pull it up later.
Yeah, send it to us so that we can put in a link for it in the show notes so that people can track them down and check it out. But that was Mary's photo cube that she did was I meant to say that's the only email that we've gotten recently. So if anybody has any emails, feel free to. You know, email us if they have any questions, because we aren't getting any emails.
We need some email love, and if nothing else, it uses up some time, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So, alternatively, you can. This is a bit more cumbersome, but it'll show that you're really dedicated. You can download the Anchor app onto your phone, which is really good because it means that we can then contact you and bring you on the show. But if you download the Anchor app. You can send a voice message to the show.
And we have one
do we?
From Mike Gutterman, and you'll be able to hear it right now. But we won't be able to hear it. You'll be able to hear it. And Mike is actually asking about, good cameras to begin doing pinhole photography with. So we'll talk about that next week. Who's our guest next week, Andrew?
John Wilkening, I think.
Yep, he's coming on to talk with us.
John Wilkening. So I've been a virtual friend of John's for some time now, and then I don't know if you guys are familiar with Let's Explore magazine. It's a sort of really, it's been three issues now, I think, two or three issues, Let's Explore. And it's a travel, an image and words-based travel magazine produced by people who want to share their stories with the editor. And each book, it is a book really, has a theme. So one of the themes was crossroads. And photographers put their images with words. And John got one of his images of his street portraits, pinhole portraits, on the front cover. And then he had an article inside Let's Explore magazine.
Cool.
And they were just some great, great pinhole images. And John's just come back from I think he drove about 5,000 miles around Utah, Arizona, you know,
somewhere.
Yeah, all over the place.
Yeah. Do you know John's work at all, Dave?
I follow him on Instagram, and he's awesome. One of the few people that I know that does handheld pinhole.
I do. Yeah.
Which I find really intriguing.
I do too, man. I have a series I'm doing.
Oh, awesome.
I've just started pinhole portraits, so handheld.
Oh, great, yeah.
I've posted two on Flickr just recently, and I've got a whole roll just developed from World Pinhole Day.
Yeah. And I've got the guy's name. The book that I was referring to is Pinhole Cameras, Do-It-Yourself Guide by Chris Keeney, K-E-E-N-E-Y. And he's a local San Diego guy who just has this wonderful pinhole book about how to make your own cameras. And
cool.
And a lot of them are just super funky.
Yeah.
Is that book readily available if I go on to Amazon or one of those other
sites? Yeah, it is. It's a hardcover. It's a great book.
We should maybe have a book section. I've got at least one pinhole camera called Lensless Landscapes by Steve Gosling, and I have reached out to Steve Gosling, but he ignored me. So maybe I'll try again.
One of my one of the things I wanted to do with starting this show was eventually start doing kind of like a quarterly release, maybe four times a year, and just have pinhole photography in it.
Like a zine, you mean?
Well, maybe a step above it, just a little bit, you know. I mean, yeah, basically a zine, but not so much words as more of just kind of an artist's name and what's going on and what they're doing, so that we can kind of look at it outside of our phone, you know what I mean? So that we don't have to constantly look at our screen. You can actually kind of see it and
almost like
print,
a little,
you know?
Like little mini portfolios, really.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so hopefully that's going to be happening soon. I'm thinking about maybe towards the end of the summer, start it whenever my kids are back in school and I kind of have a few more minutes where I can kind of do that. You know, that's kind of like going to be my plan. So look forward to that. Hopefully one day soon, maybe we can start doing that, and we can have people that have been on the show and anyone that wants to submit, really. I mean, it won't be just guest based.
No, we're not fussy.
Yeah. But, well, we are kind of getting towards the end, so this is the point where we like to let our guests do any shout-outs that you have, Dave. So if you have anybody that you are inspired by and you want to let the listeners know about it, we can let them hear it.
Chris Keeney is the one that I just mentioned that he'd be a great guest for you guys, I think.
Cool.
I've just added him to my list in my
okay.
My photography notebook.
Excellent. Yeah. Gosh.
It doesn't have to be Instagram. It could be Flickr or either way.
Yeah. I'm drawing a blank at the moment.
Have you got any of your students who are producing? I'd hate for you to single out individual students, but any students that you'd like to highlight? Can we look towards some work? Doesn't need to be pinhole.
Oh, I've one of my former students now, Edward Honecker, Honeker. He's become somewhat minorly, I guess, internet famous, whatever that means. He did a beautiful series of self-portraits that Huffington Post picked up. He won our school's annual portfolio contest.
Yeah, nice.
And then the story was picked up. He did. He has some issues with depression, and he decided to photograph himself the way he feels different times, different days.
Oh, and wow.
They're just amazing self-portraits.
What amazing therapy as well, that must be.
Yes, definitely.
Cool.
Mental health, you know, is issues amongst students has become a real, real issue. Over here in the UK it is, and I know this, but, you know, I guess it must be the same elsewhere.
Sure.
Yeah, cool.
And so many people related to it, and I think that's why it really it took off. It's been seen by literally millions of people now, his portfolio.
Edward Honecker.
Yeah, it just came from this portfolio he did in my class about 3 or 4 years ago. And now it's really, really caught on. Yeah, he's on Instagram.
Cool.
He's a wonderful young man. And now he's doing a lot of weddings, et cetera.
Cool. Well, I want to give a shout out to, we've spoken about him a few times in this show, but Alex Shates. At Granny Blur on Instagram, because he's been apparently, you know, just shooting a lot. And I really like the 4x5 stuff he does with his little homemade 4x5 camera he does. He did one on the merry-go-round.
That was great, wasn't it?
Yeah. So I really enjoyed everything. Even the pictures he's shooting with his Yashica mat that he has of his kids and his family. They're just lovely pictures. I really like them.
Mm-hmm. His poor man's Rolleiflex, that's what I told him when I saw
right.
it.
Right. Yeah.
It's great. I think it's cool. So it good is. Job, Alex. Yeah. Keep it up, buddy.
And one that's more mention about Sergey Lebedev, the guy who in Russia who makes the handmade pinhole cameras.
Yeah. Sergey.
That's Lebedev.
We've talked about him before on the show a few times.
Where was I?
Yeah, well, this was with Mark actually before Andrew.
Pre-Andrew.
Yeah. And one of our listeners and a follower that we all have on Instagram is her name is Photo Mom. I think it's 2234. Yeah, Amy.
She's coming on the show.
Yep. She actually ordered one of his cameras also, so that's why I remember seeing them, and she says that she loves her camera too, and hers is really nice, is great looking. So, yeah,
I was looking at those Kurt Mottweiler P90 cameras, those wooden cameras that Alex Yates has.
The wood block,
you know, it's expensive when they don't put a price next to anything.
But you're getting craftsmanship. I mean, those cameras he makes, they're amazing looking, you know, and he makes them out of one block of wood, and he literally cuts, like, I guess maybe 1/2 inch, 3/4 inch of the block off the back and carves it out the inside.
He uses dragon tears for lubricants to make the wood run smoother, and unicorn blood for polishing. That's why it's so expensive.
So, Andrew, do you have anybody you want to shout out to?
Shout him out. I'll shout out Rosh again. Rosh. Why do I keep calling him Rosh? That's because his surname is Togashi. Ross. Ross. Togashi. So Ross is on Flickr. I don't know if he's anywhere else. I've been a long-time follower of Ross.
Cool.
He's RT Photos, ArtyFotos. He's in Honolulu, and he does some instant work, and he's just started experimenting with an Ansco SureShot box camera, doing stuff with that. And it looks like he's had some stuff in a gallery exhibition. There's something on the Flickr page about that. And then there's these wonderful surreal, well, I think they're surreal images he makes with pinholes on the shoreline. And just going back, there's some what look like maybe paper negative stuff and some wonderful images of musical instruments. Really, even if you're not on Flickr, Corey, check out Rosh. Ross Togashi, Togashi.
All right.
And I've been a long time admirer of his images. I don't know if we can maybe try and reach out to him. And he looks like he had something in the FD Book of Pinholes, which was a Kickstarter, I think, a little while ago. I don't know if you were involved in that, Corey.
Yeah, I had a picture in that volume that came out.
So if you look at if you dig that out, mm-hmm. then Ross will be in there. And I've got this new screen, big screen, 24-inch monitor screen. I'm looking at his images now, and they're just great.
Awesome.
He's been shooting with Instax Square as well, and he's just really, really cool. Good stuff. Yeah.
So, Dave, where awesome. Can let's let everybody? I'm sorry, Dave. Go ahead.
That's all. Yeah.
I was going to say, if you want to let everyone know where they can find you, you know, Instagram, Flickr, webpage, anywhere. Where can we find you?
Instagram's probably the easiest. It's Ike, EICH underscore Lux, LUX dot PHUN.
Is it dot or another underscore? Because I've written down another underscore.
Dot, yeah.
It's dot, yep.
Okay.
Yeah, Andrew, come on.
Sorry, just try that. What is that PHUN? What's that all about? Because you've got a really strange handle there, haven't you?
Ike is my you know what I'm called basically, but part of my name.
That what people refer to you as, Ike?
Quite often my students call me Ike, yeah.
Do they?
That's cool.
And Lux is, you know, Latin for light or
image,
photo.
Yes, light, yep.
Yeah, and then fun, just fun. So it's basically it's Ike and then photo fun.
Cool.
Brilliant. I love it.
That's amazing.
So
awesome. Well, so if you want to get in touch with me, you can find me on Instagram at Pinhole Cannon. And we also have the show's Instagram, which is the Lensless Podcast. And you can email us, which we would love for you to do, at
thelenslesspodcast@yahoo.com.
If you have questions or comments or want to come on the show or anything, just drop us a line.
Yeah.
We also have a Facebook group. I'm trying to plug it. I keep forgetting, Andrew.
Carry on.
No. What do we have? We have
a Facebook group. Which has I think we're up to about 80 members now. That's steadily growing.
Yep.
And you can find us on Twitter. We're about 130 followers on Twitter. Both those locations are quite interactive.
Mm-hmm.
They're small but growing. Twitter is at The Lensless. So check us out there for all the latest show news, and we try and scour the internet for interesting pinhole-y things and tweet those. And then come and give the Flickr group some love, because I think we might have 25 people there now, but people are introducing themselves and they're starting to post pictures of their homemade cameras.
Yeah.
And Todd is on there, Todd Schlemmer, he's on there. So come on. You know you want to.
I just have to find the time. I'm actually on Flickr. I have an account because, you know, with all the updating of the policies, privacy policies or whatever, I got a notification in my email about it the other day about, hey, you need to come and make sure that you.
It's worth going on just to see Ross's images.
Yeah, cool.
They are splendid.
All right. Well, we want to say thank you, Dave. Congratulations on doing a great job and winning the challenge. There is a package coming to you.
All right.
As soon as I get it in the mail, I'll send it your way. And
thank you so much, Dave.
Great. Thanks, guys.
You've been a real gentleman, and it's lovely to have someone so passionate.
Yeah.
And someone who's giving something back to the community.
Yeah,
and,
totally. Absolutely.
When I'm next in San Diego, I'll look you up.
Yeah. I hope you do. Yeah, cool. It's a beautiful place to visit. That's for
it
sure.
Is. Yeah. So, yeah, and like we said, next week we'll be talking to John Wilkering.
Wilkening.
Yeah. So come and hang out and let's listen to us chat with him about all kinds of stuff. So,
yeah.
Awesome.
Yep. We hope everybody has a great week, and we'll talk to you guys soon. Thanks. Bye.
Excellent.
Yeah. Bye. Thanks, guys.
Bye. Bye. Bye.
Hey Hey guys, this is Mike Gutterman from the Negative Positives Podcast. I wanted to thank you all for the mentions on your show, even if you were making fun of me. And also, Andrew, thank you for the call-ins to my show. And so I thought I'd reciprocate with a call-in to you guys. Last time I tried pinhole photography, it was with a Polaroid camera well over a decade ago. I tore up a Polaroid 600 camera and tried to put a pinhole in it. Failed miserably at it. So I want to try to get back into it, give it another shot. And just wondering for recommendations on first-time pinhole shooters for a camera I could buy. I really kind of wish I could get a hold of one of those Hoga pinholes, but they don't make those anymore. That seems like that would have been a good solution for me. So just looking at what, if somebody's just starting out, wanted to get into pinhole photography. You guys were wanting topics, so I thought I'd throw that out there. Good beginner pinhole cameras. Anyhow, keep up the great work, guys, and I always look forward to it.